Good morning.
Thanks for coming and letting me ramble on about something I hope you enjoy as much as I do. Although this is one topic that we enjoy in many different ways. Mysteries are literally all around us these days. I'm not talking about spiritual mysteries, mysteries of nature, divine mysteries, the sort of things one usually talks about in church. I'm going to talk about the stories of mystery. Once they just existed on the printed page, a mystery could be contained in a short story or a magazine, maybe a book. Now, those of you who've been around the church long enough know that you may remember me talking about the great detective Sherlock Holmes up here. I'm a big fan of the guy. Sherlock Holmes came to the world on the printed page back in 1887. Personally, Sherlock Holmes came to me in a movie screen in 1971. Came a long way between those times. Mysteries escaped from print to movie theaters almost as soon as we had movie theaters. And even books and movies weren't containers big enough to hold these stories that we like. They went to broadcast television, which meant they were suddenly in the air. And they went to streaming and Wi-Fi and people pulling them in on all their screens. So even cell phones. So when I say mysteries are all around us, they literally are all around us these days, in the air. So we have to ask, mystery stories, why do we like them? What do they give us? So I hope you'll indulge me a little bit further when I talk about my favorite detective, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, for a minute. There weren't that many detective stories that came before Sherlock Holmes, but there were a couple. And they were popular enough that in the very first Sherlock Holmes story, Dr. Watson actually mentions them. "You remind me of Edgar Allan Poe's Dupin," Watson tells Sherlock. "I had no idea such individuals did exist outside of fiction." Now, I think it's kind of fun that this author who was doing a similar character to one who had come before just went ahead and admitted it right in the story he was writing right then. Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes' creator, has Sherlock Holmes tell us right off the bat that he's better than Edgar Allan Poe's detective. Here's what Holmes says in Study in Scarlet, that first novel. "No doubt you think you are complimenting me and comparing me to Dupin," Holmes says. "Now, in my opinion, Dupin was a very inferior fellow." It's like, and then, take it a step further, Dr. Watson brings up this detective novel from 10 years earlier called Monsieur Lecoq by Emile Gaboureau, and Sherlock Holmes cuts that one down too. He goes, "Lecoq was a miserable bungler. That book made me positively ill." I mean, having your main character insult a similar characters that came before him is kind of rude, but in this case, it seems to have worked for Sherlock Holmes. I mean, he's been with us for 140 years now. He's been in over 50 movies, a dozen TV series, hundreds and hundreds of books, and books by a whole lot of other writers. Dupin and Lecoq did not quite do so well, although they do turn up now and then. See, I was thinking, you know, Sherlock Holmes has existed for well over a century now, and all those Sherlock Holmeses that have been in novels and TV shows and movies, they're all very different from each other. Even though they have the same name, they're kind of the same character. I mean, they're very different. Doesn't matter. Sometimes he's old, sometimes he's young. Sometimes he's on the spectrum. Sometimes he's on drugs. Sometimes he's male. Sometimes he's female. He can be British, Japanese, tall, short, gay, straight, or all of them combined. The core of Sherlock Holmes is simply this. He, she, or they are the person who can clear the haze. They brush away the cobwebs. They cut through theories to show us the very real, no-nonsense facts behind whatever mysteries lay before us, whatever it looked like when it started. Sherlock Holmes doesn't even have to be Sherlock Holmes, which is kind of where we get the mystery genre. Sherlock Holmes inspired so many other detectives that came after him that this whole genre of murder mysteries just came to be, which is kind of ironic because of the 60 original Sherlock Holmes stories, only 37 of them have murders in them. But mystery fiction's always kind of been about solving murders above all other crimes, because murder is the top of the criminal chart. Catching a murderer can be the best thing any detective, official or amateur, can do. Except for maybe stopping a murder to begin with, but that would probably be the better option. But for some reason, you know, those aren't the stories we wound up with. It's kind of funny how many murder mysteries have characters in them too that aren't just running around scared that somebody was murdered. Because if you get into the classic murder mysteries, it's usually the person that got killed was either very rich or they were a jerk or something else that meant that, you know, the people around them were kind of weren't so worried. It's like, oh yeah, that person got killed for reasons. So they don't get quite so scared in those mysteries. Murder mysteries, somebody being murdered is the abnormal thing. That's part of why, you know, people aren't too scared, because it's a weird, the weird thing that happened. It's this strange thing that happened to their normal world, and that makes it all the more mysterious as to why this thing happened. If you're into storytelling, you might know about Joseph Campbell's classic story structure called The Hero's Journey. You know, and mysteries do fall into that category, but the first step is always the hero leaves the ordinary world behind. Now, if someone near you is murdered, that's an event that makes the ordinary world get left behind pretty quick. For TV detectives, that often winds up becoming their ordinary world. I mean, if you remember Jessica Fletcher in Murder, She Wrote, her little town, Cabot Cove, in Maine, it would have been the murder capital of the world if it was in real life. There were 246 murders during that TV show's run in that little town, just so Jessica Fletcher could solve them all. But, you know, and that's a different thing. Usually, you know, murder mystery story is, it's the unusual thing in your, you know, in your town or whatever. Once a story's main character enters that world where a murder has happened, the investigation becomes a series of trials that the hero must go through to eventually emerge with the discovery that is the solution. And that basic story structure actually goes back, I mean, it's in Greek myths, it goes back as far as humans have told stories. Detective mysteries themselves, though, are an art form that hasn't been with us all that long in human history. We didn't even really have police until the 1800s, so it's kind of hard to have detectives if you don't have police. And the popular fiction that kind of spread that, the whole mystery story, didn't actually come along till the latter part of the 1800s. So it's not like you had Augustus Caesar hiring the poet Cicero to discover who murdered his uncle Julius back in Roman times. So even though we didn't have detective stories and things going on way back when, people still love to take historical characters and put them in detective story mysteries. Like, you can find mysteries out there with Henry David Thoreau, Oscar Wilde, Abraham Lincoln. They've all been in mystery novels, including people that wrote mystery novels like Agatha Christie or Arthur Conan Doyle. I mean, they have novels where they're solving mysteries. But historical mysteries are just one of the many, many categories that we have now. We have legal thrillers, psychological thrillers, police procedurals. I mean, it's a long list. I could spend far into the morning and past lunchtime. They're just in so many flavors. I'm just going to really hit on a couple here that, you know, they kind of the two opposite kinds you tend to see are, there's the hard and violent ones where there's this private eye that he's getting beat up and knocked out more times than would be good for a human being to get knocked out, because, you know, brain damage is a horrible thing. But then they can also be light and breezy, where it's like some curious grandma is just asking questions over tea and cookies while there's a cat sleeping there that somehow gets involved in the mystery. They're both subcategories of mysteries. You have the hard-boiled noir detective stories, and then you have the cozy mystery. Now, this entire category of mysteries called cozy is really weird when you think about it, because you think of something cozy and nice, you don't think of murder happening with cozy, but these aren't really about. It's interesting, these kind of mysteries, even though it's in that, to kind of give a purpose to the story, cozy mysteries are all about like fresh baked pastries or bookstores or these oddball group of friends that you get to explore their personalities a little bit. They're about enjoying the everyday things in life. And one thing I've noticed, you know, in more recent years, Kathy and I have started watching a couple of shows we really like. Elsbeth, Poker Face, they're kind of in the Columbo style, if you remember Columbo from way back when. And they do the opposite of what a murder mystery usually does. In the very beginning of the show, you see somebody get angry at somebody else. Somebody winds up killing somebody else. So you know right away who the murderer is. The whole story that comes after it isn't so much a whodunit, where they're going to gather everybody up at the end and go, oh, it wasn't you, it wasn't you, it was you. They're going to, at the end, just figure out how we're going to bring this person to justice. You have, and that's why I think it's kind of, Elsbeth's a fun show, because you never get stress from it. It's like you got this happy-go-lucky person that is working with the police and will wander into this whole situation. And you don't worry about the killer trying to kill Elsbeth, because usually, I mean, she gets into their lives and goes into their hobby or whatever business they have, and she goes to their business, whatever, and there's back and forth. And at some point, the killer kind of knows that she knows that they killed the person, but they're so full of themselves and so sure they've got away with it that they don't worry about it. And because it's a cozy mystery, we don't worry that they're not going to get caught at the end. We know they're going to get caught at the end. Because whether it's, you know, a lawyer that's from Chicago or a cocktail waitress with a gift for spotting lies, or even, you know, a frumpy old police detective like Columbo, the investigator never fails in these mysteries. They never fail. And in the world of the cozy murder mystery, good triumphs over evil every time. And that's comforting. That's good, because that's what we want the world to really be like. A cozy place for us to rest where the troubles aren't that troubling. Now, if you ever entered the world of fan fiction, I'm going to diverge a little bit on that, because that's another place stories come from. You know that stories in fan fiction come from people's heart's desires. It's like, you love a TV show, it gets canceled, you're like, oh, I wish I had more stories of these characters. Well, maybe I will write some myself, or my friends will, or I'll write them for my friends, or, you know, people, and, you know, they get what they want out of, you know, it's like, if a story didn't give them what they want, they find a way to get it anyway, tell their own story. And that's kind of the wonderful thing about fan fiction, because the people that are doing it don't make money from it, but they still write and write and write and write, because it gives them something they need more than money, something they need so much that they'll create their own stories. And the reason I bring that up is because it kind of shows what we all get from stories, and mystery stories in particular, is things we want to hear, something, you know, we can go to a bookstore and pick up a book, go to a movie theater and see a movie, to see a story that reinforces something for us. We don't read or watch about murder mysteries because we want to see someone getting murdered. We watch them. We know murder is the wrongest of wrong things, and we want to see it made right. So, you know, as the reading said earlier, they feed this hunger for justice that, you know, comes at it sometimes when you don't feel it's all there. There's, like right now, there's times we're just itching to see justice done. You know, so many levels of things seem like there's wrongs going on right now, and we would love to see them righted. We love this mystery story we're living in currently, for everything to get tidied up at the end and just, you know, get settled. And mystery stories can act as kind of a temporary salve until we do see things get settled. And that's, you know, one of the purposes of the cozy mystery, is it provides us this getaway into a world where justice comes without too much stress. But then, I mean, those aren't for everybody. There are other mystery stories where things aren't so cozy, where people, because, you know, with the cozy, some people go, well, that's not realistic. I need something more realistic. And that's where you get into the hard and, you know, hard and brutal world that is the detective story, that's the hard-boiled or noir story. A lot of them are set in the 1920s or 1930s, where, you know, history tells us things were very corrupt and filled with gangsters. And you wind up with these shows like, oh, there's one that's been on Amazon lately that has Nicolas Cage in it, where he's basically the detective version of Spider-Man, who acts a lot like Humphrey Bogart. And that's an interesting take on a murder mystery. Or they can be set in the modern day. There's one on Apple TV called Sugar with Colin Farrell, where the rich and powerful of Los Angeles have secrets. He has secrets. And even though the detective abhors violence, a lot of people wind up getting hurt as he looks for answers. I like Sugar because, I'm going to segue, it's something we see more and more of these days than murder mysteries. Things are kind of, you know, ebb and flow, transition with things. We don't get the old locked room murder mysteries quite so much anymore. We tend to get more of the missing person murder mystery. It isn't really a murder mystery because, yes, this person's missing. Yes, they might be murdered, but they could also be alive, too. That's kind of the neat thing about it. And the missing person mystery gives the detective, the person involved, a much more serious drive to find this person because, you know, they could wind up saving them. And if you've ever had somebody go missing in your life for a little while, it is something where it's a good motivator. You'll go to any lengths to solve that, and it makes for a good mystery story because people don't usually go missing for good reasons. The great thing about this is, like I said, that the hero can find the victim, and a lot of times they're still alive. If you've ever seen the show Tracker that's on now, it's kind of like a mystery show, but at the end of every episode, he finds the person. So it's almost like a whole other version of a mystery show where, you know, we don't start with a murder, catch the villain. This one, villain's still caught, but somehow the person doesn't get murdered, which is good. So really, no matter what type of mystery stories you enjoy, they all come down to that one thing, that person trying to find the answers. And we want that. As I've said, you know, stories come from things we want and our imaginings of how we get those things. Now, sometimes stories go off track, and I'm going to talk for a minute. I'm going to go off track myself for a minute because I want to talk about Sherlock Holmes and Dracula. Now, in the time he came out, Sherlock Holmes was this, you know, when he became popular, people were looking to science for answers. It was the turn of the century. Technology, science, study were, you know, big coming things. Everybody thought, oh, you know, we have a scientific expert who can solve these mysteries. We want that kind of detective in our lives. But then at the same time, this theater guy named Bram Stoker came up with this very unscientific supernatural character called Dracula. Since Sherlock Holmes and Dracula were both set in Victorian England, the only natural thing was for fantasy writers to go, hey, let's put them in the same story. Now, let's stop and think about that for a minute. There's kind of a problem there, because we have a scientific detective and a supernatural monster. Now, Sherlock Holmes was called upon to deal with a supernatural monster once. A family curse and a demon from hell, a demon hound from hell. In his most popular novel, The Hound of the Baskervilles, which has had a lot of movies made of it. And it's a horror movie situation, and the movies are like almost horror movies, but they're not. When I say almost, it's because, and you know, I hope you've read Hound of the Baskervilles or seen a movie, because I'm about to spoil the plot of a century-old novel here. So if you want to, you don't want a spoiler, cover your ears for a minute. At the end of the book, we find out the monster demon hound from hell is just a poor old dog that got abused and trained to attack people. There was no monster. There was no supernatural thing at all. Sherlock Holmes took the mystery right out of it. There's even a lesser-known Sherlock Holmes story called The Adventure of the Sussex Vampire, which the title might get somebody excited and go, ooh, Sherlock Holmes is going to meet a vampire. But the end of the story, it was just a poor old Peruvian lady whose baby had got pricked with a poison arrow and she had to suck the blood out of his neck. There wasn't any real vampire thing going on there at all. So when in that story, Sherlock Holmes says this interesting thing. He says, the world is big enough for us. No ghosts need apply, because he's holding hard and fast to his scientific way of looking at the world. So if Sherlock Holmes had, as written and held to by his original creator, had he met Dracula, the Count would have turned out to be some smuggler from Eastern Europe. It'd be like a Scooby-Doo villain. You know, Sherlock Holmes, oh, this guy isn't a vampire. He's just a plain old guy doing some crime or the other. And that's because Sherlock Holmes was a story that people wanted at the time of this scientific detective. And I have to give his creator credit because he wrote the story. He wrote the words where Sherlock Holmes said, the world is big enough for us. No ghosts need apply. But Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes' creator, he loved ghosts. He used the money he made writing Sherlock Holmes to fund spiritualist bookstores and seances. And he came over to America and toured, you know, getting people to come out because they wanted to hear him talk about Sherlock Holmes. But then when they'd get there, he'd talk to them about spiritualism and contacting the afterlife and his own beliefs in that area. Because Conan Doyle loved the mysteries that people usually depend on religions to solve for them. He doesn't seem to have believed in vampires, but he sure got fooled on fairies at one point. Some girls did a Photoshop thing before Photoshop was invented. And Conan Doyle was a man who wanted to believe. I mean, he took these fairy photos from these girls. He took them to Kodak, as it was back in the 1920s, to see if Kodak would certify they were authentic. Kodak went, no, we're not certifying these are authentic. But Conan Doyle still believed. The story of the girls and their fairies fit in so well with his spiritualist beliefs that he just wanted to believe it. So here we have a real-life situation where a guy that created mystery stories that were solved every time had a mystery put in front of him that he didn't solve. Sherlock Holmes would have solved it right away. But that mystery went on until 1983 when one of the two little girls grew up and went, yeah, we faked the photos. And so it never got solved in Conan Doyle's lifetime. But Sherlock Holmes would have done it. He would have solved it because, like I said, he was a fictional character. You know, real life, as you can see from that, isn't quite so tidy. Doesn't get tied up in, you know, a nice little bow like that. Like I said, mysteries are around us all the time. But we like stories that have endings. We like having the villains brought to justice. We like having the strange things explained so they're no longer strange. You know, we're in the, you know, real world, we don't always get those things as quickly as we'd like. A good mystery story with a good ending, which serves as a reminder that, you know, a good detective, a watchful eye, and a clever mind, that good endings are possible. And I'm going to diverge a little bit, like, off mystery stories. One thing I like is sports movies. If you ever go see sports movies, they always end the way we want them to end. You can go, you can watch baseball games season after season after season and not see the story that you're going to see in a baseball movie. But, you know, this year we had the New York Knicks do a basketball story movie. I don't know if you're familiar with the whole New York thing this year, but basically they gave us a storybook ending in reality for those basketball fans that have been watching them for, you know, years and years and years. So it was an interesting look at how sports has its stories, but doesn't get to the story we want until every now and then. that little story that works. Because we like those endings. So, you know, we want mysteries to be solved, like in stories. But at the same time, there's things like with Conan Doyle where we want to hold back a little bit. We're human. There are beliefs, our views of things sometimes don't get us to where we want to go in solving these mysteries. But mystery stories show us and just kind of remind us that there is a way. The people in these stories are people like us, and they do find a way to get to the truth, to get justice, to get the things they all want. So I guess in conclusion, really, and when you look at the week ahead and you'll go, okay, how are we going to solve this problem? How are we going to solve this little mystery? Just remember there's mystery stories come in 1,000 different types with 1,000 different crime solvers. There's probably a detective out there in this whole universe of mysteries that's a lot like you and might just be able to solve a mystery or two if you kind of put yourself in that place. As Sherlock Holmes once said, we can but try, the motto of the firm. And that really is what we can do. Thanks for letting me ramble today. Found something in it.